Good morning and welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be focusing on Yirmiyahu Perek Lamedtes, the 39th chapter of Yirmiyahu. This is the chapter that unfortunately we've all wished would not happen. This is the chapter we've all not been waiting for. And that is the Perek describing the beginning of the destruction of Yerushalayim, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The context of this Perek, just to understand this, is that Abarbanel points out that Yirmiyahu's point in writing this Perek is not to tell us a historical fact of what happened when, because that already is recorded. Yirmiyahu wrote that down at the end of Sefer Melachim Beis. That is pretty clear. What seems to be going on over here is that Yirmiyahu is recording the exact things that occurred that ultimately made these Yirmiyahu's initial words true. Meaning to say, he's now going to record the specific events, the discrete events, which relate to the prophecies he initially said, which allows us to know that that he was in fact vindicated. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately was vindicated in a very sad and difficult way. Here we go. So let's start at the beginning. So we're told at the very beginning of the Perek that it is in the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, in the tenth month that Nebuchadnezzar comes to Bavel and all his army to surround Yerushalayim, to besiege it. Obviously, if we're thinking about that is referring to the month of Teves, and we're talking about the fast of Asara B'Teves, which is in memoriam of that particular event. But the siege drags on, and in the 11th year, we're told now that in the Chodesh HaRevi'i, in the 4th month, that's the month of Tammuz, on the 9th of Tammuz, that's when the city was breached. And all the Babylonians and the generals enter into the city, and they're facing the Beis HaMikdash. Tzidkiyahu sees them, and all the soldiers, everybody starts fleeing, helter-skelter, and Yirmiyahu runs through he escapes at night through Derech Gan HaMelech, through the way of the Garden of the King, through a gate in the wall, and he reaches the Arava, which is the wilderness. This is going eastwards towards the Dead Sea. But the Kastim run after Yirmiyahu, ultimately capturing him towards the area of Yericho, and they bring him back to Yerushalayim. It's to Rivla, which is where Nebuchadnezzar is right sitting now. This is the seat of where the siege is being conducted. And now punishment is meted out. The children of Tzidkiyahu are slaughtered in front of his eyes, and the Chorei Yehuda were killed by the king of Bavel. We have to see what the Chorei Yehuda mean in a second. It sounds like there's some people. And they blind Yirmiyahu, they take his eyes out, they place him into fetters, they place him into iron, and they take him and everybody else to Bavel. They burn down the city, they burn the shuls, they burn down the wall, destroy the walls of Yerushalayim, and everybody who's not died in the fighting or in the ensuing battle are taken in chains and in iron to Bavel under the guidance of Nebuzadron, the Ravat HaLachim of Bavel. And then what happens is they redistribute to the poor, the poorest of poor, who remained. They redistributed the vineyards and the fields to them to sort of take control. So just to understand the timeline here for a second, it might be a little confusing. We always know that we commemorate the breaching of the city on Yud Zayin B'Tammuz, on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, for the breaching of the city. Why is this that the date over here recorded is the 9th of Tammuz? So if you go in the Gemara explains that ultimately there were two destructions of the Beis HaMikdash. The first breaching of the wall in the first Beis HaMikdash, which is what we're dealing with, was on the 9th of Tammuz. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, it was on the 17th of Tammuz. That's the way that it's suggested. However, the Abarbanel has a creative suggestion where he says that maybe when they first initially broke through the walls of Yerushalayim, they saw Tzidkiyahu makes a break for it, and they start pursuing him all the way to the area of Yericho. That pursuit takes, you know, a week, and by the time they return to expanding that breach in the wall, it's already Yud Zayin B'Tammuz, so it could have even been in the first destruction of the temple. Obviously, it sounds like that although they managed to breach the wall, it sounds like the valiant defenders of Yerushalayim still fought in that breach for really almost 3 weeks till the 7th of Av, which is when the Babylonians really entered the temple, entered Yerushalayim, and ultimately slaughtered everybody and destroyed the city in the Beis HaMikdash, which obviously occurred on the 9th of Av. How exactly did Tzidkiyahu escape? So Rashi records that he had an underground passageway which led through a cave all the way out to the Arava, to the to the wilderness by the Dead Sea, and he escaped through that. But miraculously, Mephoshim point out, they quote that there was a deer which Hashem orchestrated would run in front of the Chaldeans, in front of the Babylonians, and it ran and showed them where the exit of this passageway was, ultimately where Hezekiah was emerging, and they were able to capture him. And it says that when he was brought back, not only was his own children were killed in front of him, but the Chorei Yehuda. Who's this referring to? So Radak says it's the chiefs and officers, meaning all the leadership team of Yerushalayim, who are so vehemently opposed to Babel, are all slaughtered right now. Whereas Rashi quotes a fascinating thing. He says, unlike the Radak, it's not necessarily just, we'll call it the military or public office officials. It's actually referring to the Sanhedrin. Was he so bent on killing the Sanhedrin? And that is because Tzidkiyahu had made a shvua. He had made an oath not to fight against Babel, the overlord. And the fact that he fought meant to say that he breached the shvua. And how did he do that? Well, he went in front of the Sanhedrin, in front of the religious court, who gave him the permission to break that oath. So they held the spiritual authorities culpable for this. What happens with Yirmiyahu? So the next section of the parak from Yud Aleph all the way to Yud Dalet is where Nebuchadnezzar gives special instructions to Nebuchadnezzar to go find Yirmiyahu and don't do anything to him. Only do as he himself says. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar did. He finds him and he goes and protects him and takes him from the Chadera Matara and places him with Gedaliah ben Achikam to take him out to ensure his safety. How in the world did Nebuchadnezzar know about Yirmiyahu? Meaning, why would he protect Yirmiyahu Anavi? So that Barbara now points out that it could be that, of course, this is Hashem who has inspired Nebuchadnezzar to have this mercy on him. And it could also be coupled with the fact that there are already exilees who've been in Babel for this decade, under Yechoniah, who've probably told Nebuchadnezzar that there is only one person who does not want to fight you, and his name is Yirmiyahu, and ultimately he's protected. The Radak points out that if we can read, as we'll see in the next parak, we'll see that Yirmiyahu does try to enslave himself. He does try, he puts on the chains to go with the youth, and he puts on the chains to go later on with the elders, and Nebuchadnezzar has to keep trying to protect him by removing him from those chains and trying to protect him. The Midrash points out that as well, that when Nebuchadnezzar gives him license or to do anything he wants, it's only what he wants for himself, but not what he wants for the people, meaning that he's only allowed to, you know, any personal luxuries he wants, he's all able to grant, but no luxuries or no requests on behalf of the people. Why is Gedaliah the one he's put with? So Gedaliah ben Achikam was of course the son. Achikam was somebody who protected Yirmiyahu earlier on, and Gedaliah, his son, listened to him to abandon ship and give himself up earlier on. And as Rashi pointed out, and that's why he's considered loyal to the Babylonians, is going to be placed in charge. The last section of the parak seems to be a little bit out of order, and that's from Pasuk Tesvav to Yudches, in which Yirmiyahu gives a prophecy to this person whose name is Eved Melech Kushi, saying that although you saved me and you put yourself in danger, nobody else is going to hurt you, not the Jews, not the Babylonians, you're not going to fall, and you're going to be saved. This seems to be what must have been given earlier on when he was actually saved by this person, Eved Melech Kushi. And as some of the Mephoshim point out, that this is Baruch ben Neriah, this is a recompense for all his loyalty despite the many threats and despite the many dangers that he went up against. In the meantime, this ends, unfortunately, the era, and we're going to see now the next few steps of how this ultimately comes full circle. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.